people have powerful feelings about the traffic in Los Angeles. It says something that local officials warned motorists about a temporary road work closure on the 405 last year by calling it Carmageddon. Angelenos took the hint, and this weekend they're expected to steer clear of the latest 405 closure, named, of course, Carmageddon 2. That's how it is in L.A., a snarl of overstuffed freeways and commuters who keep their cool, except when they don't. KPCC's Stephen Cuevas has this profile of a punk rocker whose music expresses the insanity of L.A. traffic while extolling the virtues of public transit.
Couple of things you need to know about Eddie Solis. He lives in L.A., loves the band Kiss, and does not own a car.
Being someone who's from L.A., born and raised, and, you know, having a few cars in my past, I saw the city much differently through a different perspective through the eyes of a bus rider.
Want to stall way the back?
Sure.
Line 18, Wilshire, Western Station.
Just steps from the front door of his home, across the street from a tortilla factory in L.A.'s Boyle Heights neighborhood, Solis catches a bus that connects him with the city's subway and the commuter train he catches to his day job at an indie record label in Hollywood.
It just opened me up to, like, little neighborhoods, galleries, clubs, bars, just everything. Just seeing what's out there, little pockets of the city.
Solis's journeys aboard L.A. buses and subway cars informs a lot of the material on The New Los Angeles Part 1, Through the Eyes of a Bus Rider, the latest release by the singer-guitarist band It's Casual. In Solis's vision of a new Los Angeles, people abandon their cars, climb aboard public transit, and rediscover their communities. One song extols the virtues of the L.A. County Metropolitan Transit Agency's Easy Pass and the urban underbelly it introduces to the rider.
And that's a nod and homage to, you know, the people who know what you can even go cheaper and really beat the system and really steer away from spending money on gas and oil profits and all that. Is all it takes for me to witness racial tension, for me to witness illegal aliens. It's not to paint a negative picture, it's just my perspective of what is seen.
Off the bus and back on the street, we make our way past a jazz saxophonist playing for pocket change and down a long escalator to catch a train.
So, where are we now?
We're at the Red Line station, the Pershing Square station in downtown L.A.
And what's our destination?
We're going to go down Fairs, another tier, and about 5 minutes we're going to get on the Red Line going northbound.
Okay, yeah. Let's go.
The Metro Red Line snakes from North Hollywood to downtown Los Angeles. It's the train that inspired It's Casual's signature tune and spawned a viral internet video. It was partly filmed late at night on a moving train as it hurtles from station to station. Solis thrashes away on his guitar and barks the lyrics, which celebrate the Red Line and call out the congested freeways that coil around Los Angeles.
Este es un tren de Metro Red Line a North Hollywood.
The thread that comes out of the record that ties everyone together is just like, be alive, don't be a victim of having a car.
MTA spokesman said he couldn't comment on Eddie Solis's furious pro-Metro message, but the Red Line video was a hit at the offices of Move LA.
Eddie's done a good job. Thank you, Eddie.
It's the public transportation advocacy group headed by former Santa Monica Mayor Denny Zane. He liked the juxtaposition of Solis blissfully riding L.A. public transit in one scene with scenes of the band raging against those notorious freeway jams.
Eddie is all frantic when he talks about highways. And so mellow when he's like grooving on a skateboard and on the bus and on the Red Line, there's a metaphor for the transformation, you know, from the, oh my God, I just got to get out of the traffic to, hey, this is cool. I can mellow out.
Or you can blast the tune like Too Many People as you claw your way across Los Angeles by car, bus, or skateboard. Too Many People could also be a motto for It's Casual. Over the years, the band whittled itself down to a power duo of Solis and a rotating cast of drummers. So you may think the burly, bearded punk rocker just can't get along with freeways, with people, or his native L.A. Not true.
I love it. I love everything about it. I've traveled throughout the U.S. many times, and I could never look forward enough to coming back. The weather, the different cultures, the landscape. I was just like, you know what? Now I know why everyone moves to L.A.
Solis will bring the love and the volume during a Red Line mini tour next month. It's Casual will play a different venue within walking distance of several Red Line metro stops from Union Station to West Hollywood. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas.
That's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. Seal Muller is our technical producer. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Thanks to Hank Hadley at KCBX. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Tyke Hendricks is our elections editor with production help from Tina Lauerberg. We had editing support from Paul Rogers. Victoria Malione is our associate senior producer. Ingrid Becker is our senior producer. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment. Health happens in schools at calendow.org. And Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information at chevron.com.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10.
The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The 605, the 101, the 101, the 101, the I-10, the 210, the 605, the 101, the 405, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The red light.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Los Angeles Nista. I'm your host, Edward Solis. And tonight, he'll be coming on in a bit here. Our in-studio guest is Tom Rajanpania, who is the owner of the Treasure Pot Thai Restaurant in the city of Paramount. And tonight, we're going to be highlighting Paramount and Bellflower and probably some surrounding cities as we get into conversation, and until you all had to get there by public transportation. So before we get into tonight's show and get Tom in here, I wanted to recap last week. It was huge. It was the first ever Los Angeles Nista doubleheader 2013. We had a two-hour show with Robert Schober, who is a pretty renowned video director. He's done music videos for Metallica, Killers, Coheed and Cambria, Green Day, Mastodon, It's Casual, Alice in Chains, and he had a really, you know, plenty of things to say. So if you're on iTunes tonight, go to iTunes, search Los Angeles Insta, and actually you'll see every episode there. But Robert Schober is what you want to click on to hear that podcast. And our second guest that night was Salman Aga, professional skateboarder and owner of Pizza Nista. Same thing, just search Los Angeles Nista and look for Salman, that episode, and it'll take you right to it. So tonight, my in-studio guest, Tom, how are you, buddy?
Good, good.
I gotta be honest with you. I'm really blown away by how active you are in social media. I think it's awesome because When I have a lot of my friends that are, you know, family oriented like you are, it's like the kids are dominating social networking and the parents don't do it much, but you're just like owning it.
Yeah, I'm out there.
You're out there. You're just like documenting everything, you know, while you're working, and you always have a smile on your face. I love that. You know,
gotta have a positive attitude.
I know. For a while, I thought I was the only guy with a smile on his face, and that's what people would say. But I think you give me some competition. maybe I'm you in Mexican form, and you're me in Thai form.
Yeah, I'm Mexican.
You're Mexican. Mexican. You're not Thai, dude, right? Nah, you grew up Mexican.
Exactly. I'm Southgate.
So did I pronounce that right? Tom Rajapanya?
Rajapanya.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm just trying my best here. I'm trying my best. You know, so tonight, you know, we're going to dig into the elements of owning an independent restaurant. We're going to talk about the paperwork, throwing out the trash, the cleaning to meet code, dealing with the city, keeping a smile on your face with great customer service, and talking about all the demands of the customer these days with the Thai cuisine that you provide, whether it's the regular recipe or the people who want the substitutes for vegan and veggie.
Right.
So we're going to get into all of that. And you actually brought a friend with you, and we're going to be bringing him on later. That's Enrique Chavez,
yeah,
who's the ex-singer from Sadistic Intent. We're going to get into a lot of underground black metal, the death east metal, side, death metal. Core. Yeah, all that stuff. But while we're doing all this, we're going to be actually highlighting Bellflower and Paramount. And I think the first thing that comes to my head is when I think of Paramount. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, is Paramount Skate Park.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that was before my time, but I heard the stories and I've seen the pictures. And now, did Eddie Fiola, the bike rider, used to ride there?
There's a lot of bike BMXers there.
Right.
BMXers, skaters, both.
Now, tell me about the layout of Paramount Skate Park.
Wow. They had a bowl, and then they had a... In the back, it was just a drop in.
How high was the bowl?
To me, it looked like it was 6 feet. No, the bowl looked like 12 feet.
Big.
Yeah.
Really big.
No, I was 13 years old.
Right. Now, this is before the internet and smartphones and social networking. So there wasn't a lot of pictures taken back then. It was just the professional photographers coming when the pros were there, right? Yeah. So, I mean, what are your memories of that place? I mean, was it always a pleasant experience to spend an afternoon there? I mean,
it's always good skating, even eating shit.
So even eating shit was awesome?
Yeah.
That's cool. Now, as far as the terrain goes, it was the 12-foot bowl. And now what else? Was there a snake run?
Oh, man. There's a park in the back where all the BMXers were. There's like a drop-in.
Right. Was there a full pipe there?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't think
it's all
was.
A blur, right?
Yeah. Like 85 to 95 was a blur for me.
Was that all due to shenanigans?
Yeah.
Well, it's hard for me to believe because you just look like a responsible adult exactly. in the day to day. I don't see that side of Tom. I know responsible Tom. Enrique's laughing, shaking his head.
He knows now, too many secrets.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, okay, let's talk about the, well, let's back up. You were so kind to provide myself, my photographer, Adam Murray, and Nicholas Chacon here, the soundboard operator, with food from your restaurant. So we have this nice spread of Thai food, and we're all going to dig into it and give you our feedback, because especially Adam and myself, we got Thai Town on lockdown in East Hollywood. You know, he used to come to my relax bar shows, and it was like, you know, you go to a show and you go to a Torung. Now, yeah. Am I saying Torung right?
Actually, like in Thai, they say Torung.
Torung.
Yeah.
Right, right. And I want to go off on a right turn really quick, because the video you sent me of the little Indonesian kid smoking, my mom is listening right now.
Oh, no.
Mom, this is the guy that sent me the link, okay?
So, guilty.
No, that's the best. I mean, that was the funniest thing ever. I haven't laughed that hard in years, seriously. So as far as the vision to do this restaurant, okay, let's dive into it. Okay, when did you decide to do the restaurant?
It was actually more my wife's idea.
Okay, she's the mastermind behind this.
I had a delivery company, messenger company, and it was kind of shaky, and I decided to get out, and she had been watching the kids for about 10 years, so she wanted to do something.
Okay.
And she went around looking for restaurants to buy, and she found this one. She really liked it, so we bought it.
You bought it, and so it was already a running restaurant.
Yeah. We've been eating there since 92 with the original owners.
Same name?
Same name.
Very
same
nice.
Name, and he sold it maybe about 04 or 05, and they ran into the ground. They sold it again, and the next owner ran into the ground, and we got it. And, you know, it's like bringing the phoenix out from the ashes.
So tell me this. How long ago did you buy it?
07.
07, okay. 07. Now, in a situation like that, when you're taking over a business, and is it safe to say it was ran into the ground? Okay, so how much work on an administrative level, physical level, to clean it a certain way and create a certain image for what is basically a brand and change the menu, I would say, right? Like a little bit, add some stuff. I mean, was it just like a work in progress over time, or was it just like,
bought it as a turnkey up, you know, business, and gradually throughout all the old chairs, it looked like a Winchell's Donuts, you know.
So outdated, yeah. Right?
We threw out those tables and all the food in the freezer. When we got, first thing we did was throw everything out and started writing a new menu.
Wow.
And we took one day off and opened.
Okay. So, you know, the intent of this interview is I want to, you know, get people informed when they listen, you know, those steps and the work it takes to go in to an operation like this. Like when I had Robert Schobert, the director who did Metallica and Green Day, you know, we delved into his history and talked about how, you know, for him, college was really irrelevant. And he's gone on to, you know, eclipse with his career kids that go to college for film. You know what I mean? So what we like to do is really get people inspired. So when you get there in the morning and turn that key and arrive, how much time does it take for you to prep for the day?
About an hour. We get there around 10 o'clock, open 11 o'clock.
Right.
Yeah. And the hardest part is getting out of bed. And, you know,
is that always the hardest?
You know what? I don't even think about it.
But what about the Thai coffee, man? Thai coffee will get you pumped up.
Yeah, I can't.
Right, Enrique?
That's right.
I only drink that maybe like once a month or.
It's pretty potent.
Sugar.
Oh, it's sugar. Okay. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. So, as far as the prep goes, so I mean, what goes into that as far as the prep? I mean, is it like chopping food?
Yeah, food prep and going over inventory. What's missing? What do we need to go out and buy?
Right. Now, as far as the items you need in place to run a legit business in Paramount.
Yeah.
What? It would be, I would say the easiest part is a business license.
Business license.
You just buy that, right?
Yeah,
and
I just
put your name.
Renewed it.
You know, that you get a bank account. But what about when you're dealing with food and people? I mean, there's a lot of delicate details with the law. I mean, so how hard or how easy is it for you to keep the restaurant up to code with the cleanliness and the temperatures and all that?
I'm always fixing things. Like 2 days ago, I fixed our hood. When the belt came off, I had to go out to the parts store and put a new one back on.
So you're doing everything?
Everything.
Cooking?
Cooking, yeah. I never thought I'd be cooking.
So as far as the kitchen goes, you know, I have a serious question. One time I saw on Facebook you were up at 4 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
You weren't up at 4 a.m. You were at the restaurant at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Okay, so you must got up at 3:30.
3:30, get there for him. I have a crew come in to steam clean the kitchen.
So that's like an annual thing?
Yeah,
or?
Well, every 6 months.
Wow.
So I lose sleep. You know, I try to sleep there, and it's like, nah,
and you do
sleep.
That because, I mean, obviously you got to keep a clean facility. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, if you don't, it's like, you know, I mean, the code enforcer comes.
Yeah, the health inspector.
And you have to deal with those people. Tell me what it's like.
Oh, I just had a new one this year. No, actually, from the summer, he gave me a B for not having a drain unclogged. And we never use that drain. It's underneath the refrigerator. I was like, okay. That week he came in four times.
4 times in 1 week?
Yeah.
Wow.
First day he came in, sat in, just watched. Second day he came in and did the inspection and he poured water in the drain. Like, oh, really? You don't even use that drain.
So he was just like honing in on a drain underneath the refrigerator.
2 days before that, that's when I had the pictures up of steam cleaning. So everything was immaculate.
Right.
You could eat off the floors.
It was really clean.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. Dealing with the day-to-day of an independent business and all the work that goes into it, do you think, I mean, when people like that come into your life to like nitpick, does it feel like... Maybe they don't have a lot going on, and they're just focusing on your restaurant for the day because there's nothing else to do.
Like this guy getting a fight with his wife this morning. It's like I've dealt with like 6 different health inspectors. This guy is the first guy that's like nitpicked on everything.
Wow. And as far as getting a kitchen steam cleaned, how long does that take?
About 6 hours.
6 hours.
Yeah.
Interesting. As far as your menu goes, you know, these days, especially it seems like in, you know, Asian cuisine, if you have a lot of veggie options and a lot of vegan options, it could be a gold mine. Is that the case?
Yeah. you can substitute meat with tofu.
Right.
A lot of Thai food has fish sauce, so you can substitute soy.
With soy.
Soy sauce. Yeah. Mushroom soy sauce. It's pretty good.
Oh, really good.
And some people say, oh, I can't have Thai iced tea. It's like, well, let me do this for you. It's a Thai iced tea with lemon.
Wow.
It's like a Thai iced tea with lemon juice.
Is that something you kind of just do off the menu?
No, they do that back in Thailand.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Now, as far as, since you're the cook, okay. So say, for instance, you want... like a beef-based dish, like a broccoli beef Thai dish. What kind of substitutes do you use for the beef?
You can use tofu.
Just tofu, straight up tofu?
Yeah, tofu. Fried tofu or soft tofu.
Right. Now, I mean, is that like another industry that's, you know, going after your business? Like, are there like a lot of distributors that are contacting you to get your orders for like the substitutes?
No, not around Paramount.
Right.
But like Rudy, one of our friends, Rudy, that hangs out with Oscar.
Yeah.
He always goes in for the sweet and sour tofu.
Okay.
So that's deep fried tofu with the sweet and sour sauce.
So, I mean, it's in disguise basically.
Yeah.
Now, let's make a left turn here.
Okay.
And talk about Hollywood.
And
East Hollywood and Thai Town. Okay. From being a Thai guy who owns a Thai restaurant and cooks, let me get your honest opinion on something. The restaurant I go to, Torung, or as you say, Torung, right below my office, Hollywood and Wilton. How is the food there, in your opinion?
I haven't eaten there since the 80s. I've been, but first time we came to Hollywood back in 73, we ate there. I remember just the chicken satay coming with flames. There.
And that was a big deal to you, right? Because you were a kid. It was like a Kiss concert,
right?
3 years
old. Like, oh, that's bitching.
So, I mean, so it's been since the 80s since you've been there. Yeah, I wanted to get your honest opinion on it. I mean, as far as, what do you think of the food, the taste, the prices? I wanted to know what you thought.
Wow.
Your perspective of it.
I used to eat there a lot. I used to go there and sober up there till like 4 in the morning.
And they're open till 4.
Before it was like 4 or 5. It was back in the late 80s. And we'd go there sober up. And then I'd come home and have forks in my jacket. Like, I don't know. It was not a good one.
Okay.
But
so,
the food was good.
Oh, all right. So from memory, it was good.
Yeah.
All right. Now, being in the city of Paramount, okay, it's not Thai Town in East Hollywood.
No.
Okay. So your clientele, what are the demographics? Is it American, Hispanic? Are there a lot of other Asian cultures coming?
And I'd say it's probably about 60% Thai.
Oh, wow.
Thai, Vietnamese, Cambodian, Pacific Islanders, Black. And Hispanic.
What do you say, I'm always interested in, what the demographics are ordering. You know, mm-hmm. is there, a certain trend with, say, when the Cambodians go into a Thai restaurant, what do they buy from you?
They always get the boat noodles.
Boat noodles?
Yeah.
Now, what's that?
Broth. It's like beef broth with beef, liver, tendon.
All that meat is in there?
Yeah.
Wow.
Stewed beef.
So the boat noodle is beef broth with beef
with
liver.
Like noodles.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Always. That's my favorite.
So that's pretty much that's why a reminiscent dish in the Cambodian cuisine.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. I mean, is it called the boat noodle or is it called something else in the Cambodian cuisine?
I'm not sure. I would think they call it the beef noodles.
Something like that. Something like that. Now, what about when, Hispanics come in? Do you think it's just all over the place or do you think?
A lot of people know Thai food now. Like when we first opened, I guess the owner put like a fish ball, a fish meatballs and everything in like the botak.
Yeah.
It's like a siete mares.
Is it?
And the Mexican guy says, you know what? This isn't, what's this crap? And they just got out and walked. He's like, you know what? No more of this crap. We're going to do it authentic.
Authentic.
And we changed it up. We put fish, put mussels. We had, for a while, we had crab claws, but it was getting expensive.
So as far as your inventory, do you go out to the markets and buy all this stuff?
Yeah. Every Thursday, Friday. We order every Monday and Wednesday.
And then you go will call it or it gets delivered?
The wife goes on Thursdays. I go on Fridays. We call in orders to another company on Monday and Wednesdays.
Right.
So it's like almost every day.
So it's an ongoing ordering process to keep the food stocked fresh on top of the day-to-day cleaning.
We don't have a walk-in freezer, so we can't stock much.
So
it's mostly fresh.
So it makes more work if you don't have a walk-in freezer.
Yeah. You can't buy the larger supplies.
To keep it for the week or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And as far as, I'm always liking to delve into the underbelly of all this, the details. What do you think as far as the economics behind it? Are prices higher than they've been because of the gas prices to transport food? I mean,
rice has gone up. When we first bought the restaurant, rice was for a 50-pound bag, it was like $21. Now it's like $33.
So 50-pound bag.
Yeah.
And what does that last? Like how long?
About a day and a half.
50 pounds of rice a day and a half?
Yeah.
It's a lot of rice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just that alone to me is just like amazing that like there's that much being consumed in one spot,
And it's been like 4 years since I changed the prices on anything. So I got to come up with a new menu.
As far as the inflation goes, I mean, was rice the item that has, you think, has been hit the most with
rice, vegetable oil, pork bellies.
Uh-huh.
Like a favorite at Treasure Pot is the crispy pork.
Uh-huh.
So we get the pork bellies. We do it all ourselves.
Wow. Wow. Now, when it comes to like the produce, the fruits and vegetables that you have on hand, is that also like a delivery basis, or do you go out to the markets?
That's handpicked.
You go out and get it, right?
And that's get that.
And that's day to day also, I would imagine.
We go to a place called Laxi. That's in right east of Chinatown.
Okay.
On Main Street. It's like the Thai Costco. That's everything.
The Thai Costco.
Yeah, I gotta take you there.
Take me there.
Yeah.
I want to document you buying stuff for the restaurant, and we'll put that on the Skid Row side.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I have a question. When you're done with that, do you hit Philippe's?
Yeah, I tried. It's either Philippe's or Homegirl Cafe.
Homegirl Cafe.
Yeah.
No, because I see the Philippe's pictures. I'm like, you know what?
It's like, I got to have a half-dipped pork salad.
I'm out here, right? Yeah. I mean, it makes it a little easier to go out there and to Thai Costco.
Yeah, I want to try Kohl's, but it's just too much of an effort.
Yeah, does Thai Costco sell pizza and gas?
No,
and coffins?
No, not yet. I'd buy one
just because, right?
Yeah.
So, now as far as going back to this, really. I call it a lifestyle change that people, I noticed the vegan and veggie options have been a huge deal in all food places around Los Angeles. Now, since you've owned the restaurant, have you noticed an increase in more people asking for veggie versions or vegan versions?
Yeah, they want something without meat. What do you have without meat? I said, well, I could substitute everything without meat.
Right.
What do you feel like eating? I'll make it for you.
Right. So, I mean,
like from 88 to 98, I was vegetarian.
Okay.
For a while.
You cared.
Yeah, I cared. And my wife, she's such a great cook. I couldn't hold out anymore.
So, you're basically holding out from the good food, right?
Yeah.
You're like, what am I doing here?
Yeah, what am I doing? Okay, I started with the seafood. Okay, I'll eat that.
And then down the line.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, you're not a veggie
anymore. No, not anymore.
Yeah. Now, as far as the increase, what's the percentage of, out of all your sales, what would you say is vegan or veggie? Let's do
maybe 10%.
10%?
Yeah.
That's still a lot though.
Yeah.
Cause that's very niche.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is that something when you use vegan products, are you actually spending more money on the item?
No.
Does the price go up or is it about the same?
It's just a modification. You know, you substitute this for that.
That's really it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, as far as, your hours go, are you guys open every day? Or?
Every day.
Wow.
Every day from 11 to 9.
No rest for the wicked.
Nah, none at all.
So you just came from there.
Yeah. Well, actually, today we're starting. It's been like 2 weeks. Me and the wife wanted to take off on Monday. Spend time with the kids. So I go in the morning, then come home, pick up the kids, then do stuff with them, then go back in the evening and clean up.
Right.
So it's not actually a day off for me. It's more for the wife.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Now, I've seen you rave about, other cuisines like Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there a similarity to Vietnamese food and Thai food at all?
Not really.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to know what the differences would be.
It's just their food is just different. I don't know.
It's completely different, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no similarities at all.
I'm trying to think of something that's similar, but nothing's coming to mind.
Now, what about their drinks like the coffee?
The coffee? Oh, I just wake you up, put hair on your chest. The French Vietnamese coffee. Oh.
French Vietnamese coffee?
Yeah, I think it's French. It comes from the French, and it's just strong.
Yeah. Now, I tried a Thai place recently in Roland Heights called Banana Bay.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
Yeah, I've been there.
What do you think?
It was nice. It's nice. It's one of my dad's friends.
Is it really?
Yeah. I call him Uncle John.
Uncle John?
Yeah.
I've gone there. Quite a bit. That's somewhat of my new Thai spot.
Yeah.
And
it's a huge place.
It's really big. It's very clean, very nice. Tons of aquariums.
Yeah.
I love the aquariums. I grew up as a kid with a lot of freshwater tanks.
Yeah.
And I just like going in there and seeing huge aquariums, you know, they have those big arowanas from Amazon. You know, those white arowana fish. Yeah. And then they got the koi pond indoors. And, you know, they got great, They got a pretty interesting clientele, just people of all walks of life enjoying it. It just seems like right now, I think now if you want, you could tell me to shut up. Okay. I think there is a peak of Chinese food happening in the '80s.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I think there's a peak of Thai food happening. There's places.
Peak of Chinese, then there was the Japanese where everyone wanted sushi and.
Right. And I think right now.
It's like Thai's the new Japanese.
That's the point I'm trying to make. Don't you agree?
Yeah. It's really exploded like late 90s, early, maybe mid 2000s.
Yeah. I've always had a question. When I go to a Thai place, I prefer like, you know, I like. You know, pad thai, you know, I'll get shrimp cakes and curry stuff. And what's the difference between Thai sweet and sour chicken and Chinese sweet and sour chicken?
The meat's not deep fried. If it's chicken, beef, or pork, it's not battered and deep fried.
Thai's is not.
No,
the Thai's Thai cuisine.
Not. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the difference.
So it is deep fried in Chinese.
Chinese, yeah.
And then what about chow mein?
Chow mein.
What's the difference?
It's just Chinese. You know, Thai's just adapted to chow mein. Like in early 70s, you got to have chow mein or fried rice.
Right. Now, there's Thai coffee. Mm-hmm. There's Vietnamese coffee. There's no Chinese coffee, is there?
No.
There's no Japanese coffee, is there?
Oh, we buy a Japanese coffee from, it's a brand called UCC in the little Tokyo.
Okay.
But that's a pretty good coffee.
But there's no Chinese coffee, huh? Isn't
there?
Never
heard of it.
I'm trying to come up with interesting questions here and pick your brain because you're the
I've seen Thai. Chinese cigarettes.
Well, I've also seen Indonesian kids smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
I'm just really trying to like ask every question I've always had because I love both cuisines. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Asian.
I've never thought I was going to own a Thai restaurant.
Never?
No, I grew up like the all-American white boy or Mexican. I played football, baseball.
What school did you go to?
Southgate High School.
Ah, yeah. There's a lot to talk about when we come back. We're going to talk a lot about Slayer and Cypress Hill.
Me and Enrique went to Southgate.
All the Southgate high stories, the Slayer performances.
Yeah, 83.
Yeah, all that stuff. The rise of Cypress Hill.
Yeah, Cypress Hill.
And just all the good action. But you brought some music, so we're going to jump into that. And we're going to get Tom situated here. He's going to play some jams. So if he's not easy on your eardrums, I apologize, but we're going to eat some of his food he bought. Okay. He brought to us. Go ahead, take it away.
We bought some spicy ground chicken with Thai basil over rice.
Ooh.
Some pork ribs and pad see ew with shrimp.
All right. Well, we're going to eat up while Tom plays some tunes. Go for it, man. Cool. We'll be back.
Yeah, I'm on the bus, I'm the one, just because another word I'm
To Los Angeles Nista. Everyone's happy. Everyone's got huge, gigantic smiles on their faces, courtesy of Tom and Treasure Pot Thai Restaurant. We're all stuffing our faces with all this amazing Thai food. And for those of you listening, I wish there was a some sort of little speaker that could convey the odor of the food so you could just, like, you know, smell what we're smelling. But I want to bring on the photographer for Los Angeles Nista, Adam Murray. What's up, man?
Hey, Eddie, how are you?
I'm good. I wanted to get your opinion on the food we're eating tonight because I know you have a lot of experience eating around town.
Well, it's delicious. I had the pork ribs. They're crispy and chewy, but they're still soft inside.
They're good.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Nice little dipping sauce on there. The chicken also was delicious and spicy. But it's not like sometimes with Thai food, you get it like it's a little too greasy or this and that, but it still feels nice and clean and, you know.
Yeah, it's not like doesn't have grease on it. It's it tastes real fresh and like light. And, you know, it's really easy on the eyes. It looks great also.
It's wonderful.
I thought it was great. And I've made my rounds, you know, at the Palms Thai restaurant.
Elvis.
Torong. and Banana Bay in Rolling Heights. And it's just like, you know, I haven't had a chance to get down to Paramount, but to have Tom bring this, I'm really grateful. And my opinion is the same thing. I mean, it's just really fresh, really tasty. And it has this like light feeling to it. Mm-hmm. Where sometimes you get like a bad batch somewhere and it's like greasy and kind of like weighs you down for the night. You know, it's kind of bad. So yeah, it's great. I guess we get the, Tom gets our approval. The Los Angeles Nista. We are now food Nistas. You know, with Pizza Nista owner Salmonaga last week, and now we got Tom. I think we're on a roll, Adam. Probably want to buy food for the rest of our lives. Just keep it coming. Yeah. This is now going to be a daily show. We're going to have a food guest every day, and we're going to request to them to bring dishes.
I'm not going to eat on Mondays anymore. I'm
just gonna... Exactly. Yeah, cool. But yeah, for those of you just joining us, Adam is actually the photographer. All the photos you see on Instagram and Facebook. And Skid Row Studios, there you go. There he just snapped a shot. That's all courtesy of Adam Murray. So thank you, Adam. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's get into it, Tom. We're going to talk the highlighted cities tonight, Paramount, Southgate, Bellflower, et cetera. You brought a friend with you.
Yeah.
An acquaintance of mine, Enrique Chavez, who is the ex-singer of Sadistic Intent. What's up, Enrique?
How's it going?
Thanks for being here, man.
Hey.
Hey, so... Now, you guys, you know, are a little older than me, so you guys have seen more.
I don't know. We feel like we're 25.
Hey, age is just a number, right?
Yeah.
I can't believe, you know, Tom is like the happiest guy on earth. I used to think I was, but I think you're the Mexican, Tom. You're the Mexican. You're the Thai me, and I'm the Mexican you.
Yeah.
No, to be honest, you know, areas like Southgate, they've had so much history in the past musically. Two bands that I know of that I'm a huge fan of and are both groundbreaking and still relevant today are Slayer and Cypress Hill. Now, you guys were pretty immersed in that city, right?
Right.
Like, went to school there.
Yeah.
You know, go to
That's
backyard parties.
This guy.
Yeah, yeah. So, tell us about the first time you guys saw Slayer.
For me, it was 83, Southgate Park.
Battle of the Bands.
So the legendary Southgate Park
Halloween night. Battle of the Bands.
So they played a Battle of the Bands in 83. Now, what did they play? Was it covers?
No, it was all originals.
It was all originals.
Show No Mercy.
Show No Mercy.
Now, when you saw that for the first time, I mean, think about it. Slayer is part of the Big Four, the pioneers of metal, right?
Yeah.
They're like, you know, it's Metallica and Slayer is number two. I mean, they're a huge deal. They do festivals. They sell a lot of merchandise. You know, they're all over the place. When you go back to that moment and saw a band playing Southgate Park in 1983.
We're 13. I mean, as a fan,
as someone interested in music, how does that change your life? What was it, a life changing experience for, like, you know, musically, where you're like, okay, this is the band?
I was like, fuck yeah, I'm gonna let my hair grow.
Is that what you said?
Like, screw sports, I'm gonna play guitar.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. What about you, Enrique? I mean, did it influence you, like, from that point on?
Yeah, you know, I grew up with, you know, everything that's metal, Judas Priest, Scorpions, Iron Maiden, stuff like that, AC/DC, and then I heard Slayer and the like.
It just blew our minds
that they could still control it at that speed. You know
what
I mean,
yeah,
Venom was around at the same time.
But on top of that, Slayer being so local,
yeah.
Did you have a connection to him even more? Like, fuck yeah, these guys are, you know, they're one of us.
They're our hometown heroes.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, they're one of us. Basically,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And to see him just hold it down. I mean, you guys probably backed them more than you would another band. You know,
oh, yeah,
we backed them, and then the next right 1 year exactly after we saw Dark Angel come up out of Salt Lake as well.
Same battle of the bands, Dark Angel.
Wow. So now, you know, I mean, growing up, I grew up in Whittier mostly. You know, I would just listen, you know. In 83, I was 8 years old. And I actually, my dad took me to a concert in 83. It was Kiss, First Year Without Makeup, with Riot and Vandenberg at Long Beach Arena. So that was my world when you guys were watching, like, the brutality of Slayer go down mm-hmm. in its rawest form. You know, I was 8 years old, but I was still into hard rock and metal, you know? Mm-hmm. And I liked Riot. I still do.
Yeah.
You know, they're fast. But it's a whole different vibe, you know? But, I mean, they're a killer. So what goes, you know, through your head when you see something like that? You know, you get inspired, you grow your hair long.
Yeah, you pick up the guitar.
Yeah. So was Dark Angel considered a Southgate band?
I would much say yeah. so, yeah. I mean, yeah. Jim Durkin, yeah. lead guitarist, main guitarist, lived in Southgate.
Yeah, because at that time, you know, bringing up the concerts I was going to and being 8 years old, I wasn't going to stuff like that, but I would listen to KNAC. And I would listen to the specialty shows like the Manic Metal, yeah. you know, with Mosh and John back in the day.
Yeah.
But not that long ago, but there were specialty shows in the mid-80s and I would hear...
Metal Shop.
Yeah, yeah.
Like KLOS. Or
yeah.
KMET.
No, yeah. And I would hear... I think KNAC would play Sadistic, wouldn't they?
They got interviewed. I was out of the band at the time already, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, they got interviewed.
I remember hearing, like, you know, Sadistic and Resistant Militia... And Dark Angel, stuff like that on KNAC. So that was my introduction to the underground. I was like 87, 88. Okay, so what you're telling me here, I'm asking questions as a fan and a professional. Like I wanna know, and I wanna, you know, just make it available to my listeners. Like, hey, you know, this is what was going down at that time. So Dark Angel was another band that was from Southgate.
Right.
Now Durkin's a great guitarist.
Yeah.
Now, when you saw someone like that with that ability, was that really like mind blowing for the style he was playing?
I want to play like that.
Right. No, because that was a whole different like class of playing. I mean, mm-hmm. that guy's real technical. He can be.
It became extreme. And yeah. I got the idea, you know what? I saw Slayer, that Battle of the Bands we're talking about, 1 year. Dark Angel the next year yeah. immediately. Then the 30th, there's a band, another great band, broken up now, called Death Force at the time. They were another good extreme band. And right around that same time, I said, you know what? I want to do something like this.
Yeah.
And so my first band was born and then, you know, didn't work out. And I got together with the Cortez brothers to form Sadistic Intent.
Awesome. Now, at the break, we were listening to some killer tunes. LKK.
LKK. Yeah.
Now they were a Huntington Park band, right?
Right.
I remember seeing them once. I think I saw them. I saw them at a backyard in Huntington Park. I may be wrong, but mid-90s, were they around still?
Mid-90s, no.
No? Late 80s. No,
they were over.
Yeah, it wasn't
them. It was maybe 89, 89, 90, maybe the latest.
Yeah, it wasn't them then. I mean, at the time, like, you know, you just went off memory, you know, and it just sounded so familiar. But there was a lot of shows I was going to, you know, I'd go see a lot of backyard parties in Downey, Whittier, and Santa Fe Springs. But then I started, you know, drifting off into like, you know, more of the South Central shows. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And one thing I noticed, and I think that it was like this in Southgate and Cudahy also. But they wouldn't have backyard parties. They would have front yard parties.
Yeah.
I saw that go down with just like tons of kids in the front, like a bunch of crust punks and metalheads and this band right there in the, you know, in the front yard.
We played, not just Oscar, we played the one in East LA in the front yard. I mean, we actually played in the garage. It was in the front yard and go facing into the yard. It was amazing.
You know what? I really want to get you guys involved here. You know, back then there was no internet. There was no cell phones. There wasn't even pagers at the time, I don't think. You know, in the late 80s, right?
No.
Late 80s pagers, but,
yeah.
You
know,
but
now, we were too poor.
Now, as far as getting very immersed and connecting with other fans of metal and coordinating going to concerts or shows, You guys were pretty active and pretty enthusiastic. You would take the bus everywhere.
Everywhere.
Like, okay, give us an example. What band, what show, and the bus going from where to where?
The Balboa Theater.
Balboa Theater going to South Central.
Manchester and what, Vermont?
It's unheard of. There's no way anybody, kid, would ever want to do that. You know what I mean? But right. We go into the Balboa Theater. I can't remember what street it was on.
I think it was Manchester and just left on Vermont or one of Western. It was crazy. It's an all-black neighborhood. Awesome, it's like a church, a revival church, and then they were doing gigs there.
So, it's like, you know, South Central back then wasn't like it is now.
No.
It's pretty friendly in some places now, actually.
Now it is. Yeah. Before, it's like, hey, baby, what's your name? You need a ride.
Yeah.
Shit, just keep walking. Just keep walking.
That's a lady telling you that.
Yeah.
Right? Right?
Yeah.
Hey, baby, what's your name? You need a ride.
Yeah, it's like, don't turn around, Dick. Just keep walking.
I think that was part of experiences like that to get to the show was part of it.
Yeah, like Detroit,
you know what I mean?
City.
that isn't that very true though?
Very true.
I mean, because and then when you get to the show, you're so happy to be there, and you're so stoked. You're pumped, and you're in the moment.
And you don't even know how you're getting home yet.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know what I mean? Because the buses stopped running at a certain time. So
yeah, back
you didn't
then,
know how you were going, but you didn't even worry about it till the show was over.
Back then, there was no red line. There was no gold line. The trains that they have now, no purple line, no green line. And the buses weren't 24 hours like they are now. Some are, mm-hmm. right? So to me, this was truly living in the moment because it was an adventure. You're there, you're pumped, and you're like, you know what? We're going to worry about getting home after.
Yeah.
So... That's
yeah. I remember also piling up inside one car. You know, 12 people in one car. I mean, Slayer or DRI like or
the LA street scene. 85 or 86.
Well, tell me a story now. Tell me a story, Enrique, that happened when you got to the show the way you did. You know, maybe a bus. Or, you know, and you're walking. You get to the venue. You actually make it in. Now it's after the show. Buses stopped running. You have some crazy stories?
I remember it wasn't an extreme show. It was actually, I don't know what year it was, but it was the Forum, LA Forum. You know what I mean? We took the bus from Southgate
to Inglewood.
Yeah.
To Inglewood to see Motley Crue.
Okay.
After the show, we had no idea we were getting home. Our parents didn't even know that we had where we were at, so we weren't about to call them either. You know what I mean? But somehow or another, you just start talking, and somebody was always headed your way, at least.
Right.
Somewhere close by, where enough where you could maybe walk a couple miles and still make it home.
Right. Okay, let me stop you right there, because I have this theory that because there's a lot of ways to connect with people without being face-to-face, like back then, you would have to make the effort to speak to someone, yes. and to be just be like open and like, look, we're in a situation. But that teaches you social skills. That teaches you how to interact with another human being, how to connect. And I think even though the technology is great, especially if you have a message to send, if you're involved in something and you have a business or whatever, a band, a project, a business, a restaurant, a radio show, whatever it is, photography. You know, it's awesome to get information from point A to point B, but I think that whole aesthetic is gone now. Like, you know, I think people using and solely relying on
the internet
or the smartphones just to socialize and really don't have anything to push. I think that there's something lacking when you actually get these people face to face. Because there's no experiences like Enrique was talking about where like, you know, you're done with Motley Crue. It's a Tuesday night. You can't call your parents for help.
No.
And
and you know what? We're in Inglewood and this is 1987, 85. Yeah. It's going to suck to be here after midnight.
Yeah.
So it's like we got to make friends and we got to make them now.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
It's a mission.
Exactly.
It was either before, as you're tailgating there, as much as you can, you know, before the show. And then once the show was over, that's when your social skills
kick in. Yeah, and I think there's that's an art, you know, to actually communicate with someone and connect with people, you know. So I think the whole generation of, you know, you guys, your generation, up to my generation, you know, going, you know, being so excited going to these underground shows and big shows, and then making everyone an adventure.
Yeah,
things weren't as easy. Yeah. Things weren't as easy, right? As they are now.
And we went at like 86. We're going to Fenders. We break down in the middle of Compton. God.
Breakdown in the middle of Compton.
Yeah, so we're like, oh, what do we do now?
Still trying to get to the show. And still making it.
We were hitchhiking. Some lady picks us up. It's like four of us in the back of the car. She goes, oh, shit, was that a cop? I said, well, why? What's up? She's like, I got weed in the car. It's like, oh,
and,
man.
And back then, yeah. Right? There were no dispensaries. There were no cards. It's like you're in the category of Cheech and Chong.
Shit, we're going to jail.
So... what would you guys say were some of the more epic shows that you saw in the 80s as far as, you know, coming, you know, both you guys coming from Southgate and, doing the local shows and then going to maybe Fenders or the Olympic? What were some of your favorite? Let's start with Tom.
Wow, it's so many.
To tie it in with an adventure, I want to hear an adventure.
Enrique?
I've been to quite a few. One of my most memorable ones, Slayer, Rain and Blood.
Right.
With DRI, Corrosion of Conformity.
Olympic?
Yeah, Blast.
Yeah. And, I remember that with Blast.
Yeah, and I can't remember what Mike Muir's band was. Los Cycles, I think, opened up or something like that.
That was 84, right?
It was Rain and Blood. 86? Yeah, but there was, I think there was 9 of us inside a small little Pinto wagon.
From Southgate to downtown?
Yeah, and 2 of us were literally pressed up against the back window. But we were rocking. You mean we couldn't even hear the music back there, but we knew something was playing, so we were rocking out still, regardless, right?
Dude, you know what would be awesome? See, if there were smartphones, back then, you would see pictures of like some guy's face. Off to the show. See, dude. Slayer and Blast and Corrosion and Conformity. I mean, that's just like too much already, you know? And
yeah, then, DRI.
Yeah.
What's the show when the speaker fell on you?
Oh, yeah. I was in South Central, Suicidal Tendencies with.
At the Balboa, right?
At the Balboa Theater. Yeah. Suicidal Tendencies, Beowulf, XL, Descendants. XL?
Yeah.
And
killer show.
Yeah. And I see people, that's when people would live. There was no barricades, you know? So they were right up against the stage. And people climb those speakers and then, do their flips off the speakers.
Okay.
So I'm watching and I'm looking at somebody's people climbing and like, wow, they're thinking, hey, maybe I should do it too. And as I'm looking, one guy pulls the horn down by accident, he slips. And as I move, I get nicked by the huge horn that was there. And none of my friends saw it happen. Next thing I know, I'm being woken up by this, suicidals back then. They had me up against the wall. They were throwing water at me. I had been knocked out by a big horn from the speakers.
Now, when you have a blow like that, I mean, was there pain afterwards?
There was none.
I mean, you just didn't know anything.
I knew what had happened because I remember seeing it coming down as it was coming down. And I moved. That thing would, if it would have landed directly on me, it would have killed me. I mean, I'm sure because it's so heavy. I mean,
right.
And but it hit me, but there was no pain. I just got up and, away from the next song, and then I was flying out again.
What was the house party scene for bands like in Southgate, Huntington Park, all that area? You know, when we're talking about Slayer to Dark Angel, was there a healthy scene or was it all in the clubs?
No, there was a lot of backyard parties back then,
and there was a lot of bands, right?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah,
you know what?
Majesty.
Majesty.
From South, it's different Majesty from the
LA
Majesty.
Do you like that name?
That name's kind of cool, actually. One of my favorite bands called Majesty. Yeah. That's why.
But, no comment.
But you know what? I want to say something about now that we're on that subject, is back then there was extreme music in different cities, but every band sounded different. You know what I mean? Wow. You could tell Terrorizer from, say, Darkness or Resistant Militia at the time. You know what I mean?
Everybody had their own sound.
Yeah. There was Tormentor. There was Bloodcum.
Yeah.
They were all fast. They were all, everybody, it was the same scene, but they all sounded different.
Now, why do you think, man, that's a good statement there. Now, let me counter that with a question. Why do you think there's more copycats now? Back then, there was a lot of originality. Like you were saying, everyone said the extreme subgenre has all, I think it always has and always will be healthy. Mm-hmm. But now more bands sound alike. And I think it's a lot of the younger bands.
The younger bands, I believe. I mean, right? You can find a few good that are good, you know, and it's not going to be very much originality left, I guess. You know,
I guess, yeah.
But there's a lot of bands that still do a good job at it. And some of them, they think they're, I guess, original, but they're not really not. I mean, some bands I noticed that, like, the whole thrash regeneration has popped up. I mean, they're doing good at what they're doing, but they're just doing copying everything that was done before.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest, man. I mean, I'm a huge fan of music. You know, I go to shows, buy tickets, buy records, buy merchandise. I work at a label during the day. I do this. And I call like I see it. You know, I mean, you get a ticket band like Municipal Waste. They're great. But guess what?
It's been done.
Been done by many other bands. And I think they're the right unit to connect with a younger generation, you know, the perfect band to do that. But, you know, I mean, how much originality is left? That's a good question.
There's not much. I mean, it's just good bands these days that still do a good job at it.
Right.
What's that band we've seen a few years? I just seen them again. Witch Haven.
Yeah. I like the local band, Witch Haven. I
mean, they're local and they're great. Yeah.
They're a great band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good to see a good local LA band actually be good, you know,
play
well, write great songs.
They stand out from the rest.
Yeah, and it's pretty clear. I mean, if something's good, it'll stand out like you say, you know. Now, back in the day, I mean, when you guys would be going to the Balboa, I mean, was it always rough because of the Suicidals? I mean, back then, things were separated.
Yeah.
skinheads, street punks, long hairs, skateboarders, surfers. I mean, you know, Suicidals, you know, all that demographic, each one of those types of person would go to the same shows.
They would go to the same shows. I think maybe a lot to do with it was that the promoters of the time, they were mixing metal with, you know,
crossover
and punk bands.
Yeah.
And putting them in, mixing them in there so you get the different genres. And you see the pin, you see the punk rockers and the Suicidals, you see the metalheads. And it was all just one big, huge pits, you mean?
Right.
Yeah. And
back then, the scene was so underground, but it was so healthy. But I think all the different scenes within the scene weren't cool with each other.
No.
It was very like, no, you're this kind of guy, so fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I remember.
It's like either one of us or fuck you.
Yeah.
I saw
words of wisdom from Tom of Treasure Pot Restaurant, everybody. Fuck you.
Oh, I hope my kids aren't listening.
Oh. You want me to stop?
No.
So, Enrique, as far as bands coming out of Southgate, that area, I mean, besides Slayer, you know, Cypress Hill, and Dark Angel, what other bands do you think were, you know, pioneering and still relevant that came out of that area?
Out of Southgate at the time?
Or Huntington Park.
Huntington Park. I mean, there's great bands.
Tri-City.
I mean, yeah, there's great bands, I mean, all over L.A. Out of that area, I mean, I don't want to. I mean, I guess Citizen Intent's still going after 25 years. I mean, they did 25. They did the 25 year anniversary show just a couple of weeks ago. But the rest of the bands, it was great bands. They ended early. They ended early in their careers. I think they could have been a lot better. I mean, we could have had a healthier scene as far as the world will know. But there was great bands. I mean, I listen to all kinds of music, and I've worked for different labels and stuff like that. But I could honestly say LA had a great scene. It's sad that a lot of those bands broke up ahead of their time, you know, and some of the bands were great, but they weren't ready to be accepted yet, like Terrorizer. I mean, they were doing the whole noise thing and people didn't understand them at the time.
I think they were ahead of the curve at that time. Like they were too ahead.
Yes.
But now everyone wants them.
Everybody wants them.
Everyone worships them now, right? Yeah. Seriously.
Yes.
And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, St. Vitus comes back. It's like everyone's like, yeah, you know, where were you, you know, 20 years ago when there was 15 people in the audience?
Yeah.
And now there's, you know, 800 or whatever, you know, like at a show. It's kind of like when a band's ahead of the curve, they break up, people don't connect, and then music moves on, and then they catch up to where the band was in that genre.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, God, these guys are amazing, and they were onto something, and these are like, you know, the steps we want to follow in for that style of music.
Mm-hmm. So, like where we went to go see Dr. No at the Slide Bar.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, we felt like we're like 16 again. We're right out there in the front row.
Front row still?
We're young guys. The next day, he's like, oh my God, my back.
We're young kids. Yeah, we're hurting the next day real bad.
Let me throw this into neutral really quick. I got a question for Tom. Right. Okay, you got a family. You have daughters. They're, I believe, younger teenager.
11 age. And 13.
Okay, so music is a part of their life. You seem to me that you would be the cool dad because you've actually participated in a lot of music and culture your whole life. Going to shows, putting on shows, we're going to talk about that. But, like, do you, you know, put yourself in the driver's seat and, like, you know, take them to, like, any concert they want to go? Because you know how it is, like a band?
Yeah, yeah, I do that. I do that.
What are some of the concerts you're taking your daughters in?
Kids are into, like, IM5 and our Cody Simpson, like, oh, these other, I have no idea who they are, but you know what? I'm there. I take them.
That's awesome.
I'm thinking about when my dad used to drop us off at the country club in Reseda and come back like at 3 a.m. to pick us up.
But, so your dad would drop you off from Bellflower?
From Southgate.
Southgate to Reseda.
Yeah.
And come back at 3 a.m. to pick you up.
Yeah.
Okay, I love that. What concerts?
Oh, my God, what was it? Ramones.
Really?
Who else was there? Sadistic Intent, but we were already driving, but I can't. There's a bunch. Lizzie Borden. There's a bunch of. There's so many, yeah.
Me Against the World.
Yeah.
Remember, give him the axe.
Yeah.
Give him the axe.
Give him the axe.
Yeah, it was like from 85, it was just kind of blurred. It's like everything, like, you know, melded together.
Now, were you guys always, like, pretty much on the side of, like, metal and hardcore punk? Like, or were you guys just really into metal at one point and then?
No.
You guys were always crossed over, right?
We were always crossed over. I mean, anything from 7 Seconds to Slayer, Napalm Death, Air Riser, and going back to
just whatever was,
Repute, you know what I mean, and all the hardcore bands.
Just whatever was ripping at the time, right?
Aggression from Long Beach was kicking
Aggression,
ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. Visual Discrimination.
VD, yeah.
I just seen them a month ago.
Yeah. No, I caught them with Cro-Mags in Pomona.
Oh,
remember I went to that?
Yeah. The next night we went to DOA.
Oh, yeah. That was Super Bowl Sunday. We were on 10 that whole weekend. Yeah. I'd like to just, for the record, say that I spent my Super Bowl Sunday with Tom from Treasure Pot Restaurant in Paramount. We went to DOA at the Reseda Country Club.
Not the Reseda. What?
No, it was Weber's.
Weber's.
And I was really excited because when we walked in, we saw Gary Tovar from Golden Voice. That's like the OG guy who started it. Now, as far as the Olympic gigs go, I mean, that Slayer show was epic because I remember Blast is killer.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like more of a metallic Black Flag, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Suicidal played that as well. What were some of the other memorable shows you guys witnessed at
The Olympic. I would say.
Because that was an era. That was an era. It lasted, what, 4 years of shows?
Yeah. The other memorable one was one of my favorite bands, Possessed, opening for Anthrax.
Oh, wow.
Anthrax, Possessed.
Was that the Spreading the Disease tour?
It was Spreading the Disease tour.
I mean, they were still really new.
Yeah. That's when they were coming up. You know, again, they're one of the big four, right? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think we listened to them. Yeah. Like our group.
Yeah, we were going for the more extreme stuff. Like, so we were there for Possessed, and a DRI played that same show. You know, DRI, Possessed, and Anthrax is, I mean, it's unheard of. I think it was like $12, $14, I think it was for that show.
That's a pretty good price.
Yeah.
I just paid $13 to get into Mr. T's to see some local bands I never heard of.
I think I paid $10 for the Suicidal Tendencies with Excel and Beowulf and Descendants show. And then Suicidal shirts were $8.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did they always come in white?
Was $6.
All the punk rock shirts were always in white.
Because you're supposed to be happy.
Yeah.
It's happy aggro, man.
I look back at some of my old punk rock shirts. They're all in white.
Hey, so as far as, this is a question for both of you. Okay. If you're living in Southgate in the 80s, you're into metal and punk, what store do you go to buy your stuff?
Yuri's Records.
Yuri's Records.
Tweedy Boulevard, yeah.
Okay. Now, I went in there a long time ago, And I was blown away because he had a lot of metal and he had like a lot of underground hip hop, like underground metal and underground hip hop. And I love both.
That's like Slayer and Cypress Hill.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get really reminiscent and nostalgic of like being such a fan of music and everything being an adventure as far as a show or getting records. And I think that's another aesthetic that's changed because people just download stuff on their phone, which is fine because, look.
I still buy CDs.
Same here. I think when people download, it's just convenience. You know, I don't think, to be honest with you, I think of anything downloading and web access to music, I think it helps the independent artist. Then
spread the word.
Yeah, more than hurt them. Because I think when a band like a Metallica or Rage Against the Machine gets a portion of the downloads actually transpiring, and then there's a lack of sales, and it's obvious that these downloads are interrupting the sales at that level. Independent bands, I think, are, you know, it's more of an advantage for them.
Getting their stuff
out. Yeah.
Yeah, profit. I think they profit more. The independent bands profit a little bit more by the downloads because you gain your message across.
Exactly.
More and distribution.
Yeah, and you're in everyone's head. You know, people know you exist. They know where to get your stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, you bring up Yuri's, a record store in Southgate. I mean, it just seems like that would be like as exciting as going to a show. You go to a record store, you flip through records, you see the new posters. I mean, it must have been great going there after school every day, right? Or every other day.
Yeah, I mean, Yuri, I used to live two doors down from Yuri. So
that close?
Yeah. So we'd go there and hang out and play. I remember we used to play racquetball in the back of the store. I mean, it was there, and I would see the new stuff. I couldn't afford any of it, you mean? But it was cool to see those records up there. And, you know, slowly but surely, you know, we came along. I'm a big record collector, and any city I'm in, I try to find a local record store if there's still any, and I still go through the vinyl.
Yeah, you take your time to go through everything.
Yeah, right?
My fingers are quick. Yeah, I could be hours in one record store if it's a good record store.
So do you think vinyl still is the most superior format?
I love vinyl. I'm a vinyl collector, I guess. I think vinyl, I just talked about it with a friend of mine the other day, and we talked. I think with vinyl doing a comeback, you know what I mean?
Right.
I think you gain the bigger package, you gain the bigger artwork on it, right. And people want that over just a digital download that's on your iPod.
Remember right. When you got your album, you buy the record, you open up, I hope there's a lyric sheet in there.
Yeah, because you wanted to know.
Yeah.
You know, and
then you sat there and memorized every word for word.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing, is you get the record, you hope there's a lyric sheet, you memorize, here it is. Every song, word for word. 6 months later, you open LA Weekly, the band's coming. Mm-hmm. Then you get Nine Guys in a Pinto. Faces smashed up against the window, right? Broken down in Compton. Black ladies asking you, hey, sweetie, need a ride? And you're like, don't look. And then you get to the show, and you recite every fucking word that you learned, because that's your trip, that's what you're into. And everything took work.
And part of that work was trying to get to the front.
Yeah.
And then when you're there, get to the front of the stage, right?
Yeah. I remember, let me tell you a quick story on that one. Slayer, Dark Angel at the Hollywood Palladium. Oh. All excited to get there. Third song into Slayer, because we missed Dark Angel. We got there late. Third song into Slayer. People are pushing and pushing, and somehow I'm being lifted up. You know what I mean? And like, no. And next thing I know, I'm over the barricade and being thrown through the double doors on Slayer's third song.
But, you know, I really think that, you know, going to record stores, buying records, and then going to, you know, see a band, it's like a process. It's like, I think if you do one, buy the record, and then go see the band, it's like this ritual. It's like, yeah, like I knew it. I knew they would be good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, but I do think that downloading music or just listening to things on social networking sites is a great thing for all bands, because this day and age with Amazon, people want things now. You order it, you get it the next day. So it's like, oh, I heard about this band. Oh, this sounds cool. I'm going to go buy it. Mm-hmm. Like for the most part, I don't download music. I'll buy stuff off iTunes, but I will try my hardest to search out bands, listen to them online for free, and then if I like it, go buy it.
Right.
You too?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing was a social network. You needed to go get your band magazine or flyers for parties that weekend at the record shop. You go to Yuri's, Middle Earth, and Zed's.
You get the flyers for that weekend,
yeah.
Right?
There's three places, Yuri's, Middle Earth, and Zed's in Long Beach.
Zed's in Long Beach.
Yeah,
Zed's
in Long Beach.
Hey, Kate needs to work at Zed's.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember him. I've seen there all the time.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
It's like we didn't have cell phones. Like, okay, you know, we're going to go to this gig. Then we're going to go to this gig this week and be there. Be at my house. We're going to take the bus or we're going to take my parents' car.
And as a band, you got to make sure those flyers are there.
Yeah.
So you all the band members pitch in to somebody who's driving you and just go drop off flyers in every corner and every store that's possibly.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. You know, this is really like not a big deal, but to us it is. Because we're all immersed in subcultures of metal and skateboarding and punk music and rock. It's like the flyer is obsolete.
It's gone.
It's gone, yeah, right?
Unfortunately.
No, but isn't that insane when you think about it? The flyer for a band show is obsolete. It does not exist anymore.
Okay, let's create an event.
Yeah, fine. Hey, I love it. I'm on this thing all the time getting the message across. But, you know, I'm still that guy that makes flyers. I like physical product, mm-hmm. You know, flyers, shirts, vinyl.
I don't know, but you're also interacting with the people that.
Like hey, come check out our gig. Come check out our gig.
Connecting. It's just like, you know, I think a lot of, you know, I have all kinds of theories. You know, you hear about these crazy people shooting each other in Orange County, like the video game kid that was like 21 years old. Remember?
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know.
Shooting people.
Yeah. And I think lack of communication with other human beings creates people like that. I think that you start to believe all the nonsense that you see and hear and you're locked up and it just gets the best of you. Mm-hmm. And then that's your translation of it.
I try to get my kids out. Like, come on, let's go out skateboard. Let's go. Let's take your bike out. Let's go to the beach. Go walk. You want to surf today? Okay, we'll go surf. You know, just get them out of the house, out of their screen.
Right.
Out of the laptop.
That's key. What about Wild Rags?
Wild Rags. We were.
No comment.
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah, which is. No Wild Rags. Wild Rags did good for certain bands. I mean,
My previous band,
you know, Citizens Contend, we were signed to them.
I mean,
one record deal, and it just went sour.
I mean, as a record store, a fan buying records are.
You could find anything. You could find anything that was underground. You could find demos from all over the world. It was great. I mean, it was a great place for if you didn't know if you could just walk in and just say I want something that sounds like this, and the guy would produce it for you. I mean, in either a cassette form or for a demo tape from a band that nowadays is popular these days. You know, what
right.
I mean? But you didn't need to know really. So stores definitely helped. I mean, Wild Rags was a big part of the scene.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is I think the first time I stepped in there was 88. I was 13 and I went to go buy my, school clothes for the year.
Oh, yeah.
I went to go get my, just band t-shirts.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, that's what I already made that decision. It's like, all right, I'm into hardcore punk and thrash. The only band I like is Kiss that has anything to do with like glam because they turned into that.
Yeah.
And it was like, I remember like I walked in when they had like the glam side. Remember that?
Yeah, lingerie.
Yeah, the lingerie. I was like standing there, I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah.
Fucking stupid.
What the
fuck? Like you have all these like thrash shirts and hardcore punk rock shirts and spiked, you know, wristbands.
The wife started out doing lingerie first.
Yeah, that's what it was. And then they met, and then he started bringing the music in. But then Dark Realm stepped in, you know what I mean? Middle Earth was around back then, too.
Yeah, Middle Earth.
Middle Earth was killer.
Middle Earth was killer.
I'd be in there for like 3-4 hours just going through every vinyl.
Oh, yeah. Anything, yeah. I remember getting my Venom 7-inches there.
All the imports.
Really?
A lot of Venom 7-inches got MDCs, I mean, a bunch of stuff. All the little, any little 7-inch vinyl I was in love with, so, yeah.
I mean, Enrique came over the house and I was doing the electrical in my garage. I found this old box. Like, oh, shit, it's all my vinyl. And it's like the Metallica, Megaforce. And
yeah, the original.
How much vinyl do you have?
About a box.
You have the original Metallica, Megaforce?
Yeah. Bought that at Licorice Pizza.
Remember, you get free licorice?
Yeah, the purple licorice.
Okay, let's talk about you guys putting shows on.
That goes these days or?
Well, it's
back in the day. I mean, yeah, we go back to high school putting shows together.
Well, yeah, let's talk about some of the shows you guys promoted together. Were there any, you know, any standouts, anything that was like a monumental show?
I remember bringing the Autopsy down for their first time here in L.A.
Well, I saw them two Januaries ago at the BCO Legions.
Okay, yeah,
that was the first time I saw them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were killer, man.
Yeah, they're still killer.
We brought them.
So what year did you bring them down?
It was 1988. No, it was like 1990, I believe it was.
Did they have a booking agent? You call them direct?
No, I just called. Me and Chris had been in touch through mail right after he left
you,
death.
You guys were writing?
Yeah, he had sent me the Autopsy demo, and I sent him, you know, the Citizen Contentment trade. And we talked by letter, like, hey, you guys should come down. And then he says, well, give me a call. I came a call, and he goes, I asked him, how much do you want? And he said, I think $200 will cover it. You know, like $200, okay, and get over here.
Like 20-something years ago.
20-something years ago. I don't know. I don't know what they charge now, but I know it's. I know it's probably up there. I mean, they put out records, and
I mean, and they do deliver the numbers now.
Yeah,
you know,
they
do. One of those legendary underground bands.
We were responsible for bringing Morbid Angel down for their first time to L.A. You know, not through our money. We would talk promoters into bringing bands down. Hey, but we don't even know this music. Just trust us. But we were pulling in, you know, the number of people that we thought they would sell.
Right, right.
So we brought Morbid Angel for two shows.
Now, where are those shows at?
Those were both of those shows were at the Country Club.
Wow.
Yeah. And with support by all the local bands, four bands on each show. And then you still get 600, I think it was, on the first day and like almost close to 800 the second day.
That's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot of people. We brought Autopsy for their second time to the Waters Club in San Pedro.
I remember that.
We brought them down through the promoter at the time, Joe, and we packed in like 600 something people in that place. That was a very memorable show. That was also my last show with them live.
Statistic.
But yeah, you know, we've been busy on and off. I mean, we take a couple of years off, then come back. You know, it's just, it's in our blood, I guess, you know, to,
sure.
to music's in our blood. And
so you always want to be involved somehow.
Somehow. Or
yeah.
Sometimes when
it gets thrown in your lap.
Yeah. And like this.
Well, tell us an example of that.
What, 2 years ago, you started doing it again?
I was asked by a good friend of mine, said, could you, you know, I have a club in Bellflower, I have a place called Spice, come and, you know, and see me. And
that was your friend?
Yeah, it was my friend, yeah, Terry. And then I met the owner, Tony. He's like, hey, man, I heard you used to promote shows. I said, that was a long time ago. He goes, hey, man, help me out here. You know, I have this great place. And we worked out the numbers. And I think we did like 14, 16 months, every two weeks.
Every 2 weeks. Death metal shows.
Punk shows, alternative shows, tribute band shows. I mean...
So draw a clear picture for people who've never been to Spikes and Bellflower. It's a bar.
It's. I would say it's supposed to be a sports bar and grill, and they do have the kitchen and everything. But it looks more like a nightclub. I would say.
You got a stage.
They have a full stage. You know, full
free
lights.
Parking. Plenty of free parking.
It's 21 over. It hurts some people. They have a full sound PA. Everything gets mic'd up.
How's the PA?
It's still a bar style PA. But everything gets mic'd up. Yeah, and then we've had great sound guys. You know, what I mean, including Dan Dismal from Church of the Eighth Day as a sound guy.
Sound.
Yeah, and then I've had Bay, a bass player for Citizen Contentment and owner of Dark Realm Records. You know, who does sound too. So he did most of our shows. As a sound guy.
Does he? Bay?
Yeah, he does
sound. Now, the style of music you guys book, is there a preference? Or do you guys focus on one genre? Or is it just stuff you like?
It's stuff we like. And then, you know, we have
friends and bands as well.
You mean that we want to help them out, promote shows. We've done benefit shows. We've done a little bit of everything. Birthday shows.
Tell us about the birthday show.
We did Tom's 40th birthday.
What? Party
there.
Yeah. Tom, when's your birthday?
September.
Are we going to go crazy this year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go crazy with this guy. You know what I want to do? I want it's casual to play your birthday at Spikes, right? But I want a big screen behind us, and I want the video of the Indonesian kid smoking and the loop just all
loop
night.
It, loop it all night. Now, we did a 40th birthday. It was something nostalgic. We had Motley Crue.
Motley Crue.
Dressed up like Motley Crue.
Shout out to Devil.
Shout out to Devil.
Yeah.
Shout out to Devil. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And Electric Funeral.
Tribute to Black Sabbath.
Band, yeah.
It's a killer.
There's Black Sabbath and Motley Crue. Taking us back to like 83. You know?
Did you go to the US Festival?
I missed it. We're too young to go.
I think it was 11. Yeah, it was a little too young for me.
Because Sabbath and a crew played that, right?
Yeah.
That's intense.
Yeah. Ozzy, yeah. It was actually Ozzy.
Ozzy, yeah.
Ozzy and Motley Crue, Quiet Riot.
The Van Halen set was pretty good, though.
Van Halen, Scorpions, Judas Priest. I mean, I know. What was it, like $15?
I don't know. It was
something like that.
I had all those bands. I was like, oh, man, I wish I was there.
So, Spikes and Bellflower, that's a... That's a bar, but the PA is probably better than most bars because, you know, from experience, when you go play a bar, they only have vocal mics, right? You guys have the ability to mic up the amps and the kit.
Yeah, we have the monitors. We got everything there. We've had bands like Possessed play there, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we've had Possessed, Evil Dead. I mean,
Evil Dead, okay.
Yeah.
Now, what's capacity, more or less? Like, what?
400 or 500?
I think it's 380, I think it is what it is. But yeah, I mean, we could push it a little.
If 500 would be like the max, right? Like,
yeah.
You have a really big band.
Pushing it, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's a sellout, like a complete sellout.
Yeah.
Like,
Tom's birthday party, I think it was at 300.
You're a popular guy, dude. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're consistent. Contingency.
We had to build a wall and separate, you know, a lot of friends didn't like the metal thing. So we built a wall for a dance. Lord.
Oh, yeah, two things going on at once?
Yeah. I put it with this guy, man.
It was a circus. Yeah, two rings.
He had all that going on, and Bay was doing sound in the other room.
Bay was doing sound in one room. I had my friend who's DJ music. I put up a drywall, you know, for a temporary wall for the night. And sound was blocked off from one from the other, and we had dancing for the Tom's friends and our friends that were in front.
Right.
And then you went across over, and there was rock metal playing on the other one.
That's great.
It's wild.
That is wild. So, as far as the genres, I mean, tell me some of the other bands. I mean, it could be local bands. Just try to get people informed of like what kind of shows you put on there.
We've had, like I said, '80s tribute music. We haven't just
the Blackouts. The
Blackouts
are good.
Yeah,
everything. Dark wave, new wave. They play the Cult. They play. X, everything. Those guys are excellent.
Yeah, then there's you got your thrash shows. We've had Witch Haven. We've had, you know, Evil Dead, Possessed. We've had Citizen
Black
10. Citizen 10 did really, really, really well, actually, that day. I think that was our first show right there.
First show there.
Citizen 10.
Sold it out.
Yeah, and sold it out. I mean, we sold it out there. And it's just, you know, some are good and some are, you know, some where you
expect
the biggest, you think you have the biggest crowd coming, and then there's, you could almost hear crickets sometimes. I mean, the ones that you think, they're like, well, this is going to be okay, but you know what I mean?
300 people show up.
Yeah, 300 people show up, you know, because it didn't rain or, you know, there's different reasons people don't show up, you know what I mean? But, or there's other shows going on and, you know what I mean? But we held it there. We held it there for, like I said, almost a year and a half, probably.
A year and a half,
yeah. Every 2 weeks, you know? Wow. It's hard to get bands every 2 weeks.
Then this guy takes off to Texas and he goes, here, Dom, you take care of it.
Oh, you handed it over to him, huh?
So Fridays, I'm putting up the stage. I was like, what the fuck am I doing? I got to run back to the restaurant and clean up.
But the stage up?
Yeah.
But it's all for metal, right?
Yeah.
It's all in the name of, yeah.
All in the name of, man.
But I was still booking. I was out of state, but I was still doing a lot of phone calls. I was still getting bands. And sometimes, you know, a band would drop out on me and Tom would pick up a band here or there, you mean? Right. A lot of bands actually Tom picked up, you know what I mean?
Trying to do a lot of punk gigs there.
like what bands? Like
The Shrooms, a lot of local punk bands around.
Right.
Like a lot of people that didn't have the chance to play these other clubs and they're playing backyard parties. Like, you know what? You guys are 21. Come on. I'll put you guys up.
Now, are you guys still doing it? Can you do it?
We've been asked. There's two spikes. There's Rosemead, but that doesn't have the stage. It doesn't have the PA. The one, the Bellflower has, you know, you have your 2-3 foot stage. I mean, so it's a good size. It's good width. It's a good depth. Everything gets mic'd up. But we've been asked to continue doing shows at the other one. But at this point, we just didn't want to get involved until, you know, think it over, I guess, a little bit more. But they're coming.
You think this summer you guys will get back into it?
Yeah.
He's pulled me in 20 years ago, and he's pulled me.
He's pulling you in 20 minutes.
Yeah. Right?
So let's talk about skateboarding. Paramount, Bellflower. Personally, since we're highlighting those areas, I like to go to Carruthers Skate Park in Bellflower. Now, have you ever skated there?
No, never. I've been wanting to. But my friend's son came yesterday. He goes, dude, you got to come down to Village Skate Park in Paramount.
Where's that?
On Somerset between Paramount and Garfield. It's nice. It's just carved there. It's nice. Easy going. Okay, let's go.
Draw some lines there.
Yeah.
I like Carruthers. They have a really nice 6-foot bowl with like real mellow transition. It's pretty awesome. And if all goes well, I'll be there this Sunday.
Okay.
So you should definitely come.
Call me.
Yeah.
I'll have my board in my car.
We'll have a picnic.
Yeah.
No, but as far as, any other skate spots, I mean, is there anything else? I mean, I know you.
Back in the day, we used to skate off of Imperial Highway. Imperial and 710.
Was there a ditch?
Yeah, this is like a ditch there, but it's all dried out.
Yeah, I remember that ditch. You would see it from the freeway, right?
Yeah.
What about the Downey Ditch by Golf and Stuff?
Golf and Stuff. We stayed away from there because old friends had gotten killed there back in the early 80s.
Gang warfare?
No, it was still unsolved murder.
Really?
Yeah. 3 people got killed.
At the Downey Riverbed there?
Right there behind the Golf and Stuff.
Like broad daylight?
Yeah.
It was at nighttime. I believe. And then
They were skating?
No, they were just hanging out.
And one of the guys managed to crawl his way back, half dead, from what I heard, right, Tom? To Golf and Stuff and passed out right there at the door.
Passed out or passed on?
Passed on.
Oh, yeah. Fuck.
So it's like, we're not going to go there.
I think we're going to play a Beach Boys song after this to make everyone happy again.
Let's bring it back up.
But I think as far as, those areas go, for me, I never skated Bellflower growing up until I started going to Carruthers Skate Park. And I'm really fond of it. In fact, I put some pictures up.
Yeah,
not so long ago. Oh, you saw them? The frontside grinds?
Yeah.
Yeah, hitting lip. Yeah. And
it's got me motivated.
You got it. It's a power of visualization. I saw myself do it. I go, if I did this in 93, then I could do it again.
Yeah.
So.
For me, I take a smoke break. And then I ride around my parking lot, just grinding. I wish I had time to go out.
It'd be awesome if, you skate with us the Sunday and you smoke while you skate. just have the cigarette in your mouth while you're carving.
Then do it naked, dude.
Again? That's why we can't skate on Tweety anymore.
All right. Hey, you're on the air. We have a caller. Welcome to Los Angeles Nista. Who's this?
Hey, what's going on, dude? It's Jimmy Cams.
Hey, Jimmy.
What's up, Yimmy?
How are you, dude? I like the way you guys sound on the radio. You sound nice and sexy. Or the cyber radio, I should say.
Cyber radio. Hey, how are things? You're in El Sereno right now.
You know what? I called right now to give you a war correspondent update. The war is going on and on. There's a major war going on right here.
What's going on in El Sereno? Last I heard that the Cholos were stealing cop cars.
Well, here's the deal, because it's really interesting how the media and LAPD and even the local so-called El Sereno community news outlets here, they're not really reporting on what's going on. There's a major war going on between the gangs here where...
Which gangs are they?
Well, there's the original El Sereno RIFA. And there's also the neighborhood El Sereno Breakoff, which is Lowell Street. And then there's, on the opposite side, a gang called Metro 13. And they're going at it, man. They're going at it. And it's kind of, you know, this type of thing happens every fucking, you know, 10 years or whatever. It's part of the vicious cycle of living in these real-world neighborhoods. But it's really interesting because it's really affecting the community. I mean, there was just a shooting, I believe, on Saturday.
Right.
I believe the people that got blasted were civilians. Like, they were not, they're not affiliated with any of that.
So what are they doing with the cars now? Like, they're just stealing them and then, like, driving into other neighborhoods, and people kind of, like, you know, don't avoid it like an enemy. They just roll up on them easily because they're in a cop car.
Well, you know, like, back when we were growing up, man, I mean, you know, how you remember how the gangs would do their thing, you know what I mean? Now it's, dude, it's a whole different age, man. Like, they're more tactical, they're more efficient. Obviously, they got, you know, what I would say, a more brazen, more special op type of mentality, man. It was reported in the news media, I believe Fox 11 News was reporting that they were stealing cop cars and either attempting to make hits on rival neighborhoods, or they were doing that. I don't want to misquote anybody, but it's just crazy, bro. Like, you see, I mean, every morning I get up and I take my diabetic fat fuck walk throughout the
Hey, and, Jimmy, yeah.
And when most people, you know, they get up, they get their cup of coffee, and they pick up a newspaper, I go read the walls, because you can see that's my news. I look at the walls.
The walls. That's very prolific.
Yeah, you know, like the classic too, spray paint the walls. Well, you know, that's fucking the, you know, that's the news over here.
That is the news. Now, why don't you share with our listeners and everyone in the studio what exactly happened the other day? There was a neighbor of yours that needed assistance because your good old gangsters were breaking into their car.
Oh, that was interesting, man. You know, El Sereno's always been there. El Sereno is a wonderful fucking lower middle income, hardworking, working class neighborhood.
It's also the home of PCP.
El Sereno has always been and always will be the depot for drugs. Whatever decade it is, if you're into it, you're going to score it here. You know what I mean?
Well, Diamond Dave did.
Yeah, you know, Diamond Dave, Van Halen. I mean, I don't want to drop names, but I mean, it's obvious. It's been well known, well documented that even like sports figures, local sports figures from the 70s would come down here and score their fucking PCP, their tippers, as it used to be called. But, you know, it's within like the last 10, 15 years, man, with the fucking meth epidemic, you know, everything's out of control, bro. That drug is like, listen, I'm not going to get on a soapbox and say don't do drugs. I love doing drugs. I don't have a horrible story with them.
And just for the record, are you on drugs right now?
No, because that only lasts. Listen, if you're a responsible partier, you only know you could burn that candle for so long. Once you pass 30, dude, you kind of,
you got to change
like
the party oil.
Yeah, you got to change your party old, but once you pass 30, now you're really pushing it. Like, your party years are like your late teens through your 20s, and you know, you can only do, like sports figures, you know, they only have a life shelf space. And you know what? Same thing with partying. Once you pass 30, all right, once you hit 35, 40, now you're pushing it. After 40, you are going to die. You know what I mean? But it's interesting, man, because these with the meth epidemic, not only do you lose your fucking common party sense, but you lose your fucking mind, dude.
And yeah,
that's been ravaging not only my neighborhood, but all throughout the whole United States. It's a major epidemic. It's a mean contamination of party minds and souls, where it's making you fucking do crazy shit. I'm sure if you work with law enforcement or you know anything about the courts, there's major cases that are overflowing because of that stuff, you know?
And share with us.
Getting back to the story, these two dudes obviously were sky high, and in broad daylight, they were trying to break into the car, man. And, you know, like, in broad daylight, dude.
Which
goes against even theft, you know, thief ethics, you know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, my neighbor was like screaming at him, like, hey, you know, fucking get the fuck away from my car. And they were, they were nonchalant about it. And
just taking their time and everything?
Yeah, taking their time. Like, hey, whatever, you know what I mean? And there's a heavy police presence here. So just the fact that they had that attitude just lets you know, like, wow, they're on a good one. And so, you know, the fucking Captain Hero comes out with a 9mm, and when anybody points a 9mm at someone that has any common sense, they're going to run. They're going to flee.
Right.
Because nobody's bulletproof. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And these guys, like, they just walked away. Like, all right, whatever. Fuck you. Like, they had no fear getting blasted. They had no fear of people witnessing what they were doing. They had no fear of possibly law enforcement coming to arrest them. They just walked away. Like, all right, whatever. You know?
That's actually pretty scary, if you ask me. Like, there's this, you know, they're not scared to die over a car stereo.
Dude, let me tell you something. I'm sure what I witnessed is happening throughout not only Los Angeles, but throughout the whole United States. This new generation of kids are fucking frightening, dude. They don't fear anything. They don't get blind fuck. And then you add meth to that or God knows what else, because, I mean, I'm out to date with the new current drugs. I don't know what the fuck. It's just crazy, bro.
Well, I mean, that city's always been off the hook. I mean, what the hell's going on? I mean, last summer, the cops smoked that OG on his porch, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then everyone, that went down, and they were shooting in the air, like, just, you know, to send a message, and then, the civilians were, and then they called in tactical.
Yeah, that was reported in the news as well, man. That was apparently a justified shooting, but they lit the dude up, man. Like, I mean, fucking, I think over 40 rounds were shot at him and stuff like that.
Wow.
You know, when you have law enforcement drawn on you, man, and they're telling you fucking to get on the floor, you better get on the floor. And I don't want to sound, I'm very critical of police, but in this case, I mean, you know, if they're telling you to drop and you're arguing and you make a sudden move, they're going to open up on you. Is it excessive to fucking blast a dude 40-something times and empty your magazines and reload? Yeah, but, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? You know what I mean?
I have a question before you leave. You're born and raised El Sereno, right?
Born and raised.
Okay, how old were you when you saw someone do the spacewalk for the first time? Now, the spacewalk is when someone smokes PCP, then they leave their house. And they're walking down the street.
You know what?
How old were you?
I was fortunate to have that lesson early in life. I think I was 8 years old. My neighbor was on a good one, dude. he was doing the Neil Armstrong, bro. He was walking the moon.
It was like 2 in the afternoon, right? And he's like, from far away, he's doing the Neil Armstrong.
He was actually fucking doing the reenactment of the space landing, of the moon landing, man. He was like, you know, one step for fucking mankind.
He was doing it backward. And as an eight-year-old, you knew that wasn't right the way he was walking, right?
Yeah, that's why I never touched that shit, dog. Fuck all that shroom, all that PCP shit.
Yeah,
never got near it, never would, never don't encourage it. Because you know and I know. You know, that shit'll fry your brain, dude.
Well, Jimmy, I appreciate you calling, and we're actually going to wrap it up. So, you know, a PSA from Uncle Eddie to everyone else, just say no to drugs, everyone.
Yeah, I want to tell you, great show, my friend.
Hey, thank you.
Love the show, dude. Keep it up.
And since we got you on the phone, let's plug your show on KNAC.com.
Oh, that's right. Every Sunday from 1 to 3, the real underground shit. No pass-kissing on there.
All right. Well, Jimmy, thank you.
No worries, man. Tommy, looking sexy, bro. Keep it up.
Hey, I heard you're giving away tickets for our show this, what day is it?
This Friday.
Are you doing a show?
Yeah. Our Claire, one of our...
Yeah, well, our other partner.
They're giving away tickets for Destroy Judas. That's right. That's the lovely music.
Wait, you guys have a show coming up.
Yeah, this Friday.
This Friday.
You're not even plugging the show. I'm telling you to talk about the shows you're putting on. You're not even plugging the show.
Yes.
Yeah, just, go ahead. Enrique.
It's this Friday at... It's Stardust and Downey. It's Destroy Judas, Maleficent Vigor, Necronom, and Fortress of the Empyrean. Of Imperium, I'm sorry. And it's $5 before 10:30, $10 right after. Prices.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can't beat it. I mean, it's a great place. Plenty of parking, cool staff, and it's our partner,
Claire.
Claire Obscure, we call her.
Right.
And she's putting that show together, and it still involves all of us, but right. Yeah, she's taking the head on this one. Yeah, so.
But so it's you and Tom and Claire doing it all as a collective?
Yeah, three of us are the team that we put the shows together
under
the Music Obscure banner.
That's great.
That's a great, that's a mean underground Mendelsohn deal, man. $5 for Destroy Judas and those other bands, can't go wrong, man.
I love Destroy Judas. I used to book them at Relax Bar.
Yeah, and they're fucking great.
And Rob the drummer, Rob Alanis, is that his name? Rob?
Yeah,
Rob. And Steve.
It was just his birthday.
Yeah. Yeah, and Steve Nelson. Great guitarist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, how'd you like that El Farino citrus, man?
Oh, it was good. It was good. Thank you for the oranges and the grapefruit.
Yeah, man. See what happens when you get contaminated water with dog piss? You get great citrus.
hey, Jimmy, tell us about your neighbor really quick.
What do you want to know about my neighbor?
Yeah, well, I see all these Facebook postings, and it appears to me this guy's been living next to you for a long time, but it's like you don't know if he's from Honduras or Guatemalan or Salvadorian.
Oh, look, man, you know.
How come you don't know? It's your neighbor.
This is the thing, Matt. It's always interesting to me how, and I mean, I come from a Mexican immigrant background, so I'm not trying to be like some fucking sangaron fucker or nothing, but it's always interesting to me how, like, you know, it's interesting to me how, like, in the early 80s with that whole revolution in El Salvador,
Nicaragua, and all that shit, yeah.
You know, they all fucking fled. They fucking, they fled. They came to America because, you know, it was the bloody revolution, the massacre and all that. They come over here and all of a sudden they're like fucking Anglos living in Beverly Hills, bro. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're that brave and that outspoken, why didn't you pick up a machete with the revolution and help off the fucking, the rebels? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Just be quiet. And my neighbor over there, these Salvadorans, they're very interesting, man. Like, they always want to fuck. It's like living next to the CIA, man. They're fucking documenting everything you do. And then I have a tendency to play, you know, listen, you can't play Black Flag and Sabbath at a fucking 2 or 3. You got to always have it at a 10, you know?
11.
Well, no, you have to, yeah. I mean, two blacks.
You know, so then, you know, they want to come on your door and complain like if they're fucking, you know, like if we're in fucking Malibu or something. You're fucking out there. Not your business, man. I'm going to write a monologue about my adventures with my neighbor, but I also have a problem because my two German shepherds, they just love... You're living in Los Angeles. I don't understand why you want to have chickens in a metropolitan city. You know what I mean?
or roosters.
Roosters in,
yeah,
a metropolitan city.
If you're
going to
have chickens and roosters, and if you can't keep them in your property, and if my dog's want to chew on them, well, then, hey, keep them in the cage. Be a responsible fucking Latino, you know what I mean?
Jimmy, man, thank you for calling.
No worries, man. You guys have a good one. Great show.
Bye.
Hi, Jimmy.
Hey.
All right, so why don't we plug the show one more time? It's this Friday?
It's this Friday at the Stardust in Downey. The address, Tommy?
Oh, God.
7643 East Firestone Boulevard. I used to do shows there.
Okay. And it's Tom the
Story Judas. Oh, man. I lost it.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah, it's this Friday. Great show. Destroy Judas. I don't even know what the bands are called right now on the top of my head.
Well, that's fine.
But it's a $5 show. It's going to be a great show. You know, support your local scene, support metal, support. And here we think we have the bands here. Oh, here he goes. I'll tell you right now. It's Destroy Judas, Maleficent, Vigor, Necronum, and special guest, Fortress of Empyrean.
Awesome.
It's $5 before 10:30. Can't
beat it. Awesome. Well, thank you for being my guest this episode.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Enrique and Tom, thank you for the food. Enrique, thank you for the metal knowledge. Tom, thank you for the food and the metal knowledge.
Welcome.
And I'll help spread the word about your show. That's my duty as a fellow metalhead. And support the community. Support people who work hard. That's my message. Thank you, Adam Murray, for the photos. Nicholas Chacon for the soundboard op. Treasure Pot Thai Restaurant for all the beautiful food I'm going to put on Instagram right now. And if you want to see Black Flag in its casual, July 14th at the Vex. And we'll see you next week with an author by the name of Lina Licaro, who wrote a book about the bars in Los Angeles. And on April 1st, we got Jackass's Wee Man and Rick Hossick. Thank you very much. Yeah.